The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from the Book of Serenity, Bajang's Fox. Pointer. If you keep this so much as the letter A in your mind, you go to hell like an arrow shot. One drop of wild fox slobber, when swallowed, cannot be spit out for 30 years. It's not that the order is strict in India, it's just that the ignoramus's karma is heavy. Has there ever been anyone who mistakenly transgressed? Main case. When Master Bajang lectured in the hall, there was always an old priest who listened to the teaching and then dispersed with the crowd. One day they didn't leave. Bajang asked them, "Who is it standing here before me?" The old priest said, "In ancient times, in the time of the ancient Buddha Kashyapa, I lived on this mountain as the former abbot." A student once asked, "Does a greatly cultivated person still fall into cause and effect or not?" I answered them, "They do not fall into cause and effect." And I fell into a wild fox body for 500 lives. Now I asked the teacher to turn a word in my behalf. Master Bajang said, "The greatly cultivated person is not blind to cause and effect." At this, the old priest was greatly enlightened. The verse, a foot of water, a fathom of wave, for 500 years, 500 lives, couldn't do a thing. Not falling, not blind, they haggle. As before, entering a nest of complications. Aha! Understand? If you're clear and free, there's no objection to my babble. The spirit songs and shrine dances spontaneously form a harmony, clapping in the intervals, singing, Leela. Who doesn't love a good story? This koan is also in the woman koans, the second case. And in the way we do it is that the student, after working with Mu in the miscellaneous koans, goes to the woman koan and skips this koan, does all the rest in the collection, and then at the very end comes back to this. Because it's important and it's not so easy. It's dealt with in the woman koan as is characteristic of the gateless gate, kind of bluntly. Here, there's a little bit more eloquence. So, if you keep so much as the letter A in your mind, you'll go to hell like an arrow shot. So, on this path of non-attachment, keep even the letter A. How do we shift? How do we shift? Another way of asking that is, what do each of us preserve? What are the things that we want to let go of, are eager to let go of? What are the things we don't want to? Things still cherished. The things we still believe in, that we believe, if only, that they will give, that they will last, they will take away. I think non-attachment or attachments is one of those really key aspects of Buddhism which is so easy to misunderstand. What it actually is. Think of it as denying, of losing, of extinguishing. It's not that the order is strict in India, it's just that the deluded ones, karma is heavy. Karma is heavy, which means what we carry is heavy. It's binding. It's like a drag. It's like a cloud. It can seem to carry us, to drag us along. It can almost certainly seem to be oneself. We can carry it without knowing. We can carry it because we think we deserve to. It's our punishment. We can carry it because we can misunderstand letting go to mean forgetting or somehow being irresponsible or not caring. And in carrying it for more than a moment, let alone year after year, it is our sense of self. Not in full, but it is something we identify with. And in that way, to not carry it, to shift, is not only unfamiliar, it can be frightening. Like actually frightening, not poetically, metaphorically, but actually frightening. Enough that we go back and pick that burden up again. If we do not carry it, then who am I then? And so the effects of the karmic actions we carry, what we've created, what we've experienced from others and have integrated, acted upon, created our own karma as a result of, for many of us is what brings us to the Dharma, right? Nobody comes to practice because you're having too good a time in this life. Everything is going so perfectly, getting everything you want. Has there ever been anyone who mistakenly transgressed? Has there ever been anyone who has not transgressed? Are there things you regret? I'm going to guess the answer to that is yes. So what do we do about all that? It's a really essential question. If we are trying to not only lighten our burden but not accumulate, because burdens do accumulate. They don't stay neat and tucked. You know, they don't weigh in at one weight and keep that weight through the course of our life. They gain weight. So how do we free ourselves? If you keep so much as the letter A in your mind, it's easy to say, well, just let it go. And that's really good instruction. And it's true. And it's exactly what we need to be doing. But if that's so, then why aren't we all immediately free as soon as we get that instruction? And so in this koan, there's more to it. In the woman koan, after the priest is enlightened, they ask Baijiang to do them a favor and say, there's a fox's body in a cave on the mountain. Would you please bury it with full ceremony? So Baijiang gets a bunch of the monastics. They go, they find the fox, pull it out of its cave, bring it down, call everyone together for a funeral. And the monks are like, for who? Nobody's died. And so they have this whole elaborate ceremony for this fox. And then that night, they have Huang Po, his disciple, have an interesting conversation. I'll get to that later in the week. When Dada Roshi would give this koan, sometimes he would say that he imagined Baijiang had been wandering in the mountains, had come across a dead fox, pushed it back into a cave, and then come down and rolled this whole story out. Haven't you all noticed this old priest who comes? No, I haven't seen it. Yeah, every talk, he's back there. Then leaves. And so, the priest comes to Baijiang. Baijiang says, who are you? Keep coming to the talks and then disappearing. He says, in the former times, I was the former abbot of this monastery. And one day a student asked, does an enlightened being, does a highly cultivated person fall into causation or not? And they answered according to the teachings. No, they do not. And for that, they were made to live as a fox for 500 lives, which is not a good thing. Does a greatly cultivated person still fall into causation? And the footnote to that says, just do good. Don't ask about the road ahead. That is also very good instruction. Just do good. Don't worry about what happens next. Just live in accord with the Dharma. Cease from creating harm. Live in accord with your basic nature and be a benefit. Don't worry about what happens next. I think of Atisha's phrase, don't expect applause. Just do good. So the old priest said, an enlightened being does not fall into causation, has freed himself. The Buddha, upon his enlightenment, said, I will not return. The house builder will not build this house again. Buddhism teaches that we return because karma is continuing. We are still a result of the forces of karmic actions. And so this enlightened being, the Buddha, does not fall back into causation, does not come back again. So the old priest was answering in just that way. So then why were they made to live as a fox for 500 years, 500 lives? In Dogen's, quite a number of teachers have commented on this koan, which is always an indication that it was of interest. Dogen says, students do not understand the principle of causation and mistakenly deny cause and effect. What a pity. Things are deteriorating and the ancestral way has degenerated. Those who say does not fall into cause and effect deny causation, thereby falling into the lower realms. Those who say does not ignore cause and effect clearly identify with or have deep faith in cause and effect. When people hear about identifying with cause and effect, they are freed from the lower realms. Do not try to get away from this. Do not doubt this. Without that deep faith, and Dogen is emphatic, and he's just teaching in accord with what began with the Buddha. But without that deep faith, I mean, think about it. We might think that our actions have no consequences. There have been schools of thought that believe that. That everything just happens in some sort of random or not causal way. Or that actions don't matter, not having faith in cause and effect. Or that we can avoid the consequences, fly below the radar, get away with it. And so deep faith in causation, really trusting it, in a way is helping us to see that everything we do has influence. Right? Every action, every intentional action in Buddhism has an effect. We could say every action has an effect, but the intentional actions are the ones that Buddhism is really concerned about, because that's where we're creating karma, arising out of whatever we're holding on to, whatever we believe, and how we create and perpetuate dukkha. And so a faith in Buddhism that is, you know, in the early years, to talk about faith took a lot of qualifying, because so many people being new to Buddhism, just assumed that faith was either faith in a higher being like God, or that it was somehow blind faith. You know, the Buddha said so, just believe it. Even though that's explicitly not what the Buddha taught. The Buddha was very clear about the importance of having some faith, some trust enough to practice, but then verifying. Having faith in causation helps us to understand that we have influence, and that influence can go in a lot of different directions. Right? We can do a lot of good, we can do a whole lot of harm. I think in a very real sense, deep faith gives us the confidence to just do good. We don't have to chart our actions on a grid. We don't have to act and then measure its effect. Just do good because there's faith in cause and effect. Doing good is good in its own right. And so we don't have to be bodhisattvas on the path that are always looking for rewards or treats or gold stars. But the question remains, how can we be free? Because we have created karma, we still create karma. I'm imagining that all of us do carry regrets. Things that I really wished I had not done. But I did. Perhaps you did. We cannot go back. And this is the path of going forward. It's a path. So how do we go forward with that? Is freedom just minimizing our negative actions? Just arriving at a place of perfect behavior, perfect speech, perfect thoughts? Is it like a matter of just being hyper alert? Right? Sort of staying in the shadows so you never do anything that might go awry? If realizing the nature of mind, the true nature of reality, is the Buddha taught, ultimate liberation, then what is it that is realized? Well, it's the nature of the self. It's a nature of phenomena, but how does that free us of cause and effect? Or what do we realize about cause and effect? So this priest said, an enlightened being does not fall into causation. The footnote says, a fitting statement is a stake to tie a donkey to for 10,000 years. In other words, it's fixing something. It's a definitive statement. And being so tethered, you can't move freely. So what is the priest's mistake? I mean, think about it. If you did not believe in cause and effect, how would the world look to you if your actions didn't have consequence? What would the world look like to you? In Dharoshi's The Eight Gates, in the chapter on right action, which is really the chapter on the precepts, he talks about how at that time, so this is going back, I think it was 1990 when it was published, around then, because he talks about for 10 years we have been. So for 10 years we were here. And he talks about how in Western Dharma that the idea, that particularly in Zen, that Zen is sort of beyond morality. The morality is of the relative world, but Zen realizes the absolute nature and is beyond morality. And so he's very emphatic about that being not true. And that's a issue, you could say, that's been part of Buddhism since the beginning. Where there were schools of practitioners who believe that there is no cause and effect, or where people misunderstood selflessness as meaning that there is no consequence to our actions. Dogen quotes Kumarata, the Indian ancestor, who said, "We see both wholesome and unwholesome results occurring in the world throughout time. People acting well, people not acting well. Ordinary folks deny cause and effect when they see kind and fair-minded people suffer and die young, while those who are violent and unjust prosper into old age. Such ordinary folks say neither crime nor beneficial acts bring consequences. Doesn't matter. They do not realize that the consequences of our actions follow us for 100, 1,000, or 10,000 eons." So this is the teaching of Buddhism, that's the deep faith, is that there is no there is never not cause and effect. And that sometimes it's that effect appears quickly, sometimes it takes longer, sometimes it takes so long that we don't see it. We don't recognize the effect of this particular action. But what the Buddha taught, and the Buddha was said to have, because of the depth of his enlightenment, was able to see into all of the profound complexities and subtleties of causation. And thus was able to say that there is no intentional action that does not bring forth a consequence. There again, just do good. Don't get worried. Don't worry about it. Don't get hung up on the road ahead. And so, but what Kumaratu is saying is natural. I mean, probably in every generation of human life and experience, people have wondered this. Right? They've lived their lives and they've looked over here and they've seen this person or these people acting like hell beings and reaping lots of rewards, seeming to get all the good stuff, perhaps with impunity. And they see other fair-minded, kind, good people over here who are suffering. And life just seems to keep dealing them bad hands. How to make sense of it? Right? Because, of course, then that can lead a person to think, well, what difference does it make if I lead a good life or not? If they don't have sort of an inner moral ground, it's like, why bother living well? Right? If I'm not going to get some reward, if I'm not, the consequences of that are not going to benefit me, why don't I just try and get away with everything I can? What gives weight to our actions? What is that burden, those burdens that we carry? Because probably I'm more than one. What gives our burdens their weight? These karmic burdens, does it come from the original action itself? And somehow the life of that action, which happens and then is gone, but somehow lives on in us? Is it the action itself? If the action itself has a certain weight inherently, then everybody would suffer the same consequence. If it was something positive, then everyone would equally be uplifted, be joyful, be happy, be inspired. But that's not what we see. You know, it's like here in the Zendo during Sesshin, monitor, teacher can offer encouraging words. For one person, it's inspiring, it wakes them up, it brings them back to their practice, it's invigorating. And the other person may feel annoyed, irritated, or insecure, feel left out. They're not talking to me. Does it come from the one who acts? Is it just from the side of the one who receives? What is the weight? We experience it internally. I talked about this recently in this body-mind. But where exactly? We can't deny that I'm experiencing it. That's how I know that I'm feeling something, carrying something, being bound by something. But where is it exactly? And what is it exactly? Does it have a certain size, a certain shape? Does it live in a certain part of me? Is it in my heart? Is it in my chest? Is it in my gut? All dharmas are forms of emptiness. But then why was the former abbot turned into a fox? Dogen says, quoting Nagarjuna, if you deny cause and effect in the worldly realm, as some people outside the way do, you negate this present life as well as future lives. If you deny cause and effect in the realm of practice, you reject the three treasures and the four noble truths. In other words, effectively, you can't practice. I mean, think about it, the whole of practice, the whole of Sesshin. Not the whole of it, but a significant part, and certainly a significant part of what motivates us, is the faith that if I understand, develop an understanding that is accurate about this body and mind, about myself, about my actions, about everything that constitutes the self, about the world, about you, each other, about time, about the nature of things, that if I develop a good understanding and then I practice in accord with that understanding, that I will be moving more and more in a trustworthy way into accord with everything. Because I'm practicing living in accord with everything. So if I'm doing that, I should experience that, right? There should be signs that that is happening, just as when I'm not doing that, I'm living against, not in harmony, in conflict with, there are certainly signs that that is happening. And so we rely on that, right? We trust that. And there's a tension there, because on the one hand, just do good. Don't look for the road ahead. Just sit. Just do this day. Just do Sishin. Don't come in with a truckload of expectations and then be checking yourself. Okay, what have you gained so far? What have you gained so far? What have you gained so far? Right? Because that's a cage. And you'll know it because you'll be crying at some point. At the same time, to be wholeheartedly practice, and after some reasonable amount of time, say, nothing has happened. There's been no change whatsoever. I have not seen any consequence to my action. That bears further investigation. So there's a tension. Dogen says, clearly know that those who deny cause and effect are outside the way, whether they're living a life as a home dweller or a renunciant. They say that the present life is unreal, empty, and that their transient body, empty, is in this world, but that their true nature abides in enlightenment. I'm in the world, but not of it. I see all of you from my lofty place. I'm sorry. They believe that their true nature is mind, that mind and body are separate. But those who have studied deeply with true teachers should abandon mistaken views which deny causation. Have faith in and pay respect to the compassionate teaching of our ancestor Nagarjuna. So this drumbeat of having faith in causation, not just, you know, it's a good idea, keep that in mind, but like keep it in mind. Examine it, study it, observe it. Now, come closer, look more deeply. What is the nature of cause and effect? How can we free ourselves? If we cannot undo what has been done, how can we free ourselves? And from a more traditional perspective, if what I am carrying is the result of an infinite number of lifetimes, in which in many of those lifetimes, I was not a good person. I was causing all kinds of chaos and riot. Remember a few years ago, I think it was during COVID when Pema Chodron did a retreat, I think it was an online retreat, and she was talking about death. And she said, you know, if you find yourself getting really freaked out or worried or obsessed or frightened about death, she said, just remember you have died countless thousands, hundreds of thousands of times, and in some really miserable ways. So keep it in perspective. This is just one. How do we free ourselves? What is it that binds us? The old priest said, an enlightened being does not fall into causation. They have realized something about cause and effect. What is a cause? It's an action, something you do with your body. What is the nature of this body? Something you do with your words. What is the nature of the words? Not their meaning, but their self-nature. Something you do with your thoughts. What is the nature of a thought? Well, one thing you already know is that each of those three wheels by which we create karma, change the world, are impermanent. Right? Have you ever had a thought that never went away? Have you ever said something that once you said it, it remained permanently in your mouth or in the ears of the hearer? We'd like to think that our body is permanent. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if that would actually be a good deal. Clearly it's not. The intention that arises, that brings forth that action, that comes and goes. The emotion that it might originate, the klesha, if it's a negative, I'm greedy, I'm acting out of that, I'm angry, I'm acting out of that, that comes and goes. The consequence, I say something, you have a certain reaction, that comes and goes. So where is the burden? What is the, because we can't deny. That's what these teachers are saying. Do not deny. Dogen says, do not doubt this. Do not try and get away from this. I mean, that's the basis for a kind of a seriously unwell person. And we may have some in high places who do not know the effect or do not care. They know that they have effect, but may not care of the consequences of those actions. Which is, in a sense, like virtually denying. If we didn't have faith in causation, who would practice Buddha Dharma? If there wasn't cause and effect, we wouldn't feel regret or remorse. There'd be no heartache, no worry. We wouldn't carry a burden if there was no cause and effect. We could not could put our burden down. Or rather, what you could say about all of those would be there would be nothing but regrets and no way to affect them. There would be no end to the heartache and no way to diminish them or free ourselves of them. There would be no end to burdens and they would be permanently attached to us. What is the true thing about all this? It's important because it's the basis upon which we're practicing. And having deep faith, as I said, is not just about a kind of theoretical faith in something called cause and effect. But if we really trust that and study it, practice it, observe it, examine it, that feeds directly into how we practice. I mean, think about it. It gives us the ability, the confidence to keep going. When your mind is very close to convincing you that you are completely wasting your time, like when are you going to get it? Or that everybody else here is perfectly suited to be a Buddha, but I'm sorry. You were like in the toilet, right, when they're giving out Buddha nature. Right? What keeps us going when it seems like it's not moving, or it's insurmountable, or my attachments seem intractable, or my comparing mind is killing me because I'm digging a hole and I'm digging it deeper and deeper and deeper and just throwing myself into it. Everybody else is fine, but I am going down. So it's quite important. So, is this old priest wrong? There's a miscellaneous koan that's in our tradition that says in the Mahaprajna Paramita Sutra, expounded by Manjushri, it says, an ascetic who is pure and undefiled will not enter nirvana, and a monastic who breaks the precepts will not fall into hell. Now that seems to directly contradict the teachings. It's important to understand that that ascetic practices to purify their defilements. And they do not, in their impurity and their defilement, they do not, in their purity and not undefilement, do not enter nirvana. And the monastic practices the precepts. And when they break them, will not fall into hell. Is that contradicting the Buddha's teaching? That's why this is an important koan. Because it's easy to, and one could read, if we didn't read it closely, the commentaries, and it seems to be affirming, basically, just do good. Don't worry about the rest. The priest answered wrongly, was made to live as a fox, that's pretty clear. Asked for a teaching, Baijing responded, does not ignore causation, released from the fox body, rewarded, that seems pretty clear. That's not untrue, but it's not enough. And it's not just a matter of not being the real depth of this koan, but it's not enough for our lives. That alone will not be sufficient to free us. Dada Roshi said, we encounter and practice the precepts initially on the basis of faith. They make sense. And we can bring them into our lives. Hallelujah. It takes years of practice and training. Oh, I thought I was quoting him. These are actually my words. Because I wrote Dada Roshi, and I thought, I'm quoting him. Then I realized, no. I'm remembering what he used to talk. Remember he told the story once of he was listening when we started recording talks on audio. The beginning of Dharma Communications was in room 21 in a drawer. Kyoto, who was the head monk, had a tape recorder. And she would record the talks in here, and then she would go in her room, and when somebody said, can I get a recording of that tape? She would go in and put a blank tape in, hit record, and then send it to the person. That was the beginning. And so he was telling the story once that he was going somewhere and was listening. He had picked up a talk. He thought it was like a senior's talk, and he put it in. And he starts listening to it, and there was something about the sound that was a little wonky. But he was listening, and it was good. It was like good Dharma. But he was listening, he thought, those are my words. They're like completely quoting my words. They're like parroting everything I'm said. And then he realized it was him. So Dada Roshi used to say, talk about how we encounter and practice the precepts on the basis of faith, right? Because they make sense, and we can bring them into our lives. And that through our practice and years of training and examination and observing and inquiry and clarification, we begin to understand more and more deeply and broadly the profound nature of these teachings. So they're one of the most, I think, kind of quintessential examples in Buddhism of a teaching that can seem, that anybody can understand, right? A child could understand the precepts and be encouraged to follow them, right? They make that much sense or that available or that sort of straightforward. And at the same time, they really embody the complete teachings, really, the most deepest teachings of Buddhism, to see how they are non-dual, arising from and manifesting selflessness, are always good medicine, are always good guides, are always revealing the enlightened life, and are not fixed. They are not rules. They are not dogmas. They're alive. And so I'll speak about this a little bit more as the week goes on. But let me just offer this to take a little something back to your seat. in the Womankind commentary, or the poem, I think, or the commentary, it says, if you have an eye to see into this case, then you will know that the former head of the monastery did, in fact, enjoy their 500 happy, blessed lives as a fox. So, what is that pointing to?
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.